It's the Coach's Corner on BeginnerTriathlete.com. Your chance to get insights from multi-sport leaders like Suzanne Atkinson, a.k.a. Adventure Bear, from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and StillCityEndurance.com. Suzanne, first of all, thanks a lot for your time.
Sure, you're welcome.
Tell us how you became a coach. I mean, what were your general reasons when you first dove into the sport?
When I first started coaching, I had been teaching some fitness classes for our local mountaineering school in Pittsburgh. When I was away at residency, a lot of the emails going around about training for mountaineering were sent out by some really ultra-competitive, extreme military guys, and I didn't feel that their approach was appropriate for the majority of people who were interested in learning the skills, particularly for the women that were involved. And so I spent a lot of time starting to study physiology and different training methods, and that was at about the same time that I was getting into triathlon myself, and I'd hired a triathlon coach. And I realized that the similarities in physiology between any type of endurance sport were such that I could apply what I was learning to triathlon as well. So based on that experience and teaching some of these fitness classes and seeing success with the performance of my mountaineering students, I decided to pursue coaching certification in triathlon, and those the things that I had already studied worked in well with that, with the triathlon and the endurance aspect of that sport.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned kind of the mindset and the approach that some of the coaches had that you initially were involved with. Talk about what your philosophy is, because there are any number of approaches that people take.
Sure. I guess that my philosophy has to do with trying to find the best match for the athlete in question in terms of their background, their personal physiology, their other commitments such as family or work, and knowing what their goals are in the sport. And depending on all those factors combined, you can have two completely different training approaches for two athletes who are training for the same event. You know, for example, a young single college graduate who's training for an Ironman may be able to devote, 15, 16, 20 hours a week to training for an Ironman a year from now, whereas, you know, a mother, father, family person, full-time job with kids that has to work in all those other life commitments can still train for the same event, but they have much more limited time. So given those time limitations, I feel that my job as a coach is to come up with the best type of training that's going to help that person meet their needs while still remaining fresh and energetic and optimistic about their outlook on all the other commitments that they have. So I work really hard on making training an integrated part of their lifestyle as opposed to making that the primary commitment to their lifestyle.
And you talk about their time commitments or their time constraints. What about personality as well? How does that factor in?
As a coach, I find that the people that are attracted to me in the first place have been attracted to me either based on some lectures or some talks that I've given, or maybe some pieces that I've written. So a lot of the athletes that come to me are sort of pre-selected as people that I know I'm going to get along with. And by that, what I mean is that they take a very mindful approach to training. They're usually interested in technique. They're usually interested in discussing ways and methods of approaching training and discussing the physiology. I'm certainly more than happy to work with athletes who don't care to discuss that stuff and just want a training plan. But as a coach, I get a lot of benefit from having those discussions with athletes. And when there are athletes that want to be able to discuss all those parameters with their coach, it's really important to have a coach who's able to discuss those things and teach them about the reasons why they're doing certain types of training, because then they're going to be much more enthusiastic about doing it.
What are some of your athletes' accolades and success, too, just like different people with their time constraints and personalities and all that? Success can mean a lot of different things, but what for you are some of your athletes' top accolades?
One of the athletes whose accomplishment I'm most proud of, and I know he's proud of it as well, is someone that I helped train last year for the Leadville 100. For anyone who's not familiar with it, it's a 100-mile mountain bike race that's based in Leadville, Colorado, with a starting elevation of 10,000 feet. Now I spend my summers in Estes Park at 7,500 feet, and even for me driving from Estes Park to Leadville, I definitely noticed the altitude change. So it's a big event. It's very notorious for the altitude, and obviously a 100-mile mountain bike race is pretty significant. What I thought was really successful about his accomplishment was that he's got a full-time job and two kids, ages 3 and 5, plus a wife, and he devotes a lot of time to his family. So given all those constraints, we were able to come up with a training plan for him that was effective. It integrated a variety of intensity intervals throughout the preceding 6 months in a way that added up to a good base of fitness and endurance for him. And we were able to do so while still giving him one full weekend day off every week, with the exception of maybe 2 or 3 weeks immediately prior to the race. So it was a big, lofty goal. He put in a lot of training hours, and we were able to structure his training to fit in with his family life in such a way that his wife was completely supportive of his efforts.
When you have an athlete that's missed a workout, or how do you approach that with them? I mean, what's your style in dealing with that?
I never try to make anyone feel bad or guilty about missing things, because obviously people have reasons that they miss them. A coach or a training partner may think that you have good or bad reasons, but in the athlete's mind, the fact is that it's a missed workout and possibly a missed opportunity to gain fitness. And so you just need to move forward and figure out what to do next in order to maintain your momentum. Now, if they've missed a workout because they're feeling fatigued or overtrained, then we obviously need to discuss that and figure out why they're feeling that way. If they've missed a workout because they're busy at work or busy with their family, again, that goes back to the things I talked about before, is that we have to find a training plan that lets them integrate their lifestyle with their training. So there's always reasons for a missed workout, and it just means that we need to discuss it, find out why it happened, you know, not place any judgment on it, but it's just information to collect, and then we move forward from there to hopefully find, you know, a training pattern that's going to be most easily maintained by them. You know, the other side of the coin is that if I'm giving somebody a training plan that's a little too ambitious, they feel bad about missing workouts. And, you know, perhaps that was my fault for not listening to them, or perhaps it was partially their fault for not telling me what all their commitments were. But as a coach, if I put workouts on a schedule, an athlete feels obligated to do them, and if they miss them, they tend to feel guilty. So I need to be very aware of the ramifications of me being overambitious, of what that can do to an athlete's motivation.
What are your thoughts on gadgets? And by gadgets, I mean everything from heart rate monitor to power meters. Are they necessary? Do you use them a lot?
I use power with about 75% of my athletes, and I love using it. I think power is a great training tool. If you're someone that doesn't mind looking at the numbers and spending some time looking at the data and learning how to apply that to your training. On the other hand, if you can't afford one, or if you're, you know, the type of person that doesn't even like to balance their checkbook, then it's certainly not a requirement. Power is just another way to measure intensity. It's a very precise way, and you can get really specific with your training plans if you're using power. But all the other measures of intensity, such as heart rate, pace, perceived exertion, those are still factors that I use, and even in my power-based athletes, I teach them how to take those power numbers and start listening to their body a little bit better, so that in the end, they're still working and racing off of perceived exertion and not just looking at numbers on a power meter. So do I think they're necessary? No. Do I think they can be helpful? Yes. But I definitely don't think that if someone can't afford them or is not at a point in their education where they're ready to learn about a new training method, it's certainly no loss. You can still complete and train for just about any event using perceived exertion alone.
You know, one question that I make sure and ask the coaches is, because I've dealt with it personally, and then I, as a result of it, I found that a lot of other people have dealt with it. I had a year recently where I turned 40, and I put in more miles running than I ever had before when I was younger. And I thought by more and the intensity as well that I'd be faster than I ever was. But I neglected, like, my core. I didn't do strength training. I didn't have to do it when I was younger. And while my legs were were strong and things moved along pretty well, eventually parts started flying off, so to speak. How important is strength training?
I think you bring up a good point in that, you know, you turned 40, as I also did recently. My experience personally and with working with athletes is that as we get older, we need to pay more attention to, you know, specifically core, and depending on what else the athlete does besides triathlon, possibly some other, you know, arms and legs as well. I generally don't prescribe strength training for the periphery, for arms and legs, but I do insist that the majority of my athletes do core work. The only exception would be for some of the collegiate athletes that I work with. They just respond so well to higher training loads and recover so quickly that in some ways there's almost not time to fit in additional strength training. You know, if they're responding well, if they're making progress, if they're having good race results, then keep doing what's working. For myself personally, this past winter I arranged a personal trainer to work with myself and my cycling team, and I noticed huge improvements in my ability to just not just pedal the bike, but I felt more comfortable on the bike, and I had a sensation that my legs were able to go towards moving the bike forward rather than, you know, using these subtle movements to help stabilize myself on the bike. And that was something that I never really appreciated before, putting a lot of core work in. So I think core in particular is especially important as we get older, as is stretching and flexibility. So I try to integrate either core workouts or yoga or something along those lines with most of my athletes.
A couple of final questions. If there are, there's a triathlete out there that's going by a book or a web training plan, why should they invest in a personal coach? What are some of the arguments that you would make for them switching over?
I think that person needs to look at what kind of progress they're making, if they're enjoying their training, if they feel like they're improving with their training. The first triathlon that I entered, I actually used a program that I found on Beginner Triathlete, and that's how I found it. I was planning to do a triathlon and wanted a little bit of guidance. It was actually my second triathlon, and I had just had back surgery and was using the training as, you know, cross-training for recovery. So I followed the plan, and it worked, and I completed the triathlon, and then I set my sights on longer and more interesting races. When I got a lottery spot for the Escape from Alcatraz, I realized that was a pretty serious training endeavor, so I hired a coach, and I'm really glad that I did so, and it was Brett Daniels, who's also known as Rocket Man on Beginner Triathlete. So I think that you just need to look at how well you're doing with the book or the web-based training plan. You need to look at regular markers for whether or not you're seeing improvement, whether that's field testing or race results. And if you're stagnating, if you find that you're not having fun, then it's probably time to talk to a coach and see if you can get something customized.
And finally, Suzanne, if there were a number one tip for beginner triathletes, what would your number one tip for those newbies be?
I think the most important ingredient for success is consistency. So my number one tip would be to find a training plan that you can maintain with consistency, which means don't start out being overzealous. If it means that you start out training three times a week and you can fit that in three times a week every week for the first 4 weeks of your training and it's been consistent, then it's time to move up. Mistake that a lot of people make is jumping in with both feet, scheduling 6 to 9 workouts a week and finding they can't keep it up, and then they get frustrated and quit. So number one tip is just to find a schedule that you can maintain with consistency.
Great. Suzanne, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome, Kevin. Thank you very much.
And thanks to all of you for listening to this edition of Beginner Triathletes Coach's Corner. Until next time, I'm Kevin Patrick.